to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org. Thank you. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to today.
I don't either, but I think it's funny.
I want to pretend like I know what that means, but I don't, so I'm just going to go with the honesty and look confused.
He's just hung. He hung up.
He's hung up. Today. All right.
Technology Bites.
How is today Technology Bites?
It skipped.
Is that on the record? Ha, 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 ha. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Ha, 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 ha. Perfect show.
Why did that not work?
Why did that not work? Because you were too busy being clever and not doing your job. All right. Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And that's it.
That is it. Groovehouse is
Groovehouse is still
surfing.
Couch surfing now.
Yeah.
He's out. Yeah, we don't have a Groovehouse. Lee Hutchinson is...
He's probably having fun.
At E3, which is the gaming convention.
Yeah.
So he's doing battle against Gamergate or something.
Or he's too nauseous from VR games to function on the radio.
That could be it as well. Welcome to the show, Peter Hughes. All right. Well, we are still, I was really kind of hoping for a semi-strong showing, at least having most everyone but one back, but we're still flying and missing geek formation, so yay. All this storm has got me tired. I'm just tired. Mm-hmm. You know, the attack of Tropical Storm Bill. I mean, yesterday there was 10 of us in the office, I think.
Yeah, there was a very light workforce.
Traffic
commuting
was
has been very nice.
Yeah.
That's
commuting
what I
was
say.
Nice.
That's, yeah.
Even today.
But nothing really happened.
At least for us, there are some people, I think, that were adversely affected by the weather events of the last couple of days.
In Houston?
This afternoon, we had one of the bands come through where I live, and it was of course, that's when I was, like, out at the store, but it was nothing to fool with. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're okay.
I mean, yeah, if you got right under one of those bands, you could get a fair bit of rain, but how adversely affected? I mean, was there any flooding anywhere? I wasn't aware of any, but I also don't watch the news because they say that everything's going crazy and they were, I read a news article, you know, my mom sent me and was like, oh my God, are y'all okay? And you know, the article was, wasn't even TV news. It wasn't video. It was, you know, a paper. I don't remember what one it was, you know, but it was just like, oh man, there's water pooling on NASA Road 1. Every time there's rain, water pools somewhere.
Yeah, I think the media kind of blew it up. I didn't see any coverage either, but I know that the few people that didn't make it in didn't come in because they couldn't come in. It's because they thought that yep. they should stay with their family and protect them, or later on in the day they wouldn't be able to because
yeah.
I think it was kind of hyped up.
I guess it was like some runs at grocery stores, people there were runs
yeah.
on staple items, and
yeah.
somebody was saying, because we were out of town and we were coming back into town, and somebody texted and said, oh man, you know, y'all need to stop at a grocery store and get some provisions, and you better get gas before you get here because there's like people waiting hours in line for gas. And I was like, what is Houston gone crazy? What's going on?
Well, it was a tropical storm and it was in the Gulf and it was coming towards us.
Oh, no.
Well, the band, you know, that I went through, that I was in this afternoon, and this is in the tail back end of the thing after it's passed up into, you know, north east Texas.
Yeah, it's funny. It got that long tail in it. Like, it just kept sucking up water from the Gulf. Like it.
I called like that the mullet.
It pretty much was. I mean, the eye got all the way up to Dallas, and it was that it just kept growing that tail all the way back to the Gulf.
Well, I've never driven on the top of a hill and had the water be like you were down. You know, I mean, it's one thing in a low spot where all the water kind of comes together from a lot of places. When I was driving home, going on the top of the hill, the water was 3 inches deep.
Well, the difference
was
between,
the weirdest thing.
Difference between you.
I mean, it's a quantity of water you get at a time.
What's the difference between you and the entire city of Houston is that you went out without really any expectation of horror and you encountered it. Whereas everyone around here was running around in circles and spitting up nickels. Just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I mean, I went to bed, you know, I was wondering if I should stay up all night and wait for this to come ashore. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I stayed up all night during the actual flood that happened. couple of weeks ago, and so I went to bed and I woke up and there's nothing going on.
So on the drive in, I had heard that, so I stopped in Columbus to get gas, and I was waiting to pay, and I saw people walk in, and one of them had the T-shirt with the skylight of the Astrodome pattern,
yeah,
and his son was wearing like a retro Astros jersey and a ball cap, so I'm like, obviously they're from Houston. So when they came up to pay, I was wearing a Houston Texans cap. So they walked up, and I turned to him, and I said, are you coming or going? And he said, oh, we're going. And I was like, oh, okay. So are things crazy there? Is, like, stuff really? And they're like, no. And I saw the rain's not supposed to get there till like, 3 in the morning. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll be home by then. So I got home around 1 a.m., and I was like, oh, I need to go look at the radar. So I popped up the radar. I was like, there is no way that's getting here anywhere near 3 a.m. I mean, that looks like tomorrow at lunch at best, probably in the afternoon or evening. So, yeah, when I woke up, nothing was happening. And they had changed the forecast. It was going to be in the evening sometime.
I think we were in real danger of drowning in the drool of the salivating news reporters.
Yeah.
The look of disappointment on their faces as they tried to find, like the ones especially down in Galveston,
find something.
Crawling down the seawall to meet the rising surf.
Well, yeah, I mean, the waters did, but that was the other thing. That's another thing that that article talked about was like, oh, the stars already storm surge. It's like, you know, water's rising in the, like near Kima. It, you know, and then they're like, oh, it's already over the roads that go under the Kima Bridge. Well, that's like 6 inches normally from the water.
It's like I turned on my faucet, my sink is filling with water.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, so yeah, and she asked, my mom asked about that. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, anytime any kind of tropical storm or anything comes out of the Gulf to us, it's going to bring, you know, a storm surge. But it's a tropical storm, so it's not like a hurricane that's going to bring, you know, a 10, 15, 20-foot storm surge or something. It's not as strong.
You said that, and then you said, that's why they named it Bill, and then everybody you named Bill hated you.
Well, my good friend Bill Shirley.
He's disappointed.
Got hit with greater force than we did from the storm. Snark. It was a snark storm for all the people I know named Bill. At any rate, so we survived. We're here. We ventured out. I was at least a little worried that whatever was going to happen tonight, you know, or this afternoon.
Tonight?
Yeah.
There's still one more band coming through.
Well, you know.
It's not too late.
Yeah. But they're talking about, you know, the weather being bad yesterday and today, you know, and tapering off maybe this evening or something. But,
right.
I mean, you know, of all the false stories, that was one of them.
I accepted that it was possible that we could get a lot of rain. And granted, yeah, there was a lot of rain a week or two ago, and so the ground's still pretty saturated. And so it wouldn't take a whole lot of heavy rain to cause some problems. I considered that to be a possibility. But the way people were... seemed like preparing at the last second, it just seemed a little odd. Like, it's not maybe
problem,
flooding, but it,
from outside, I don't know how they did. I'm sure that Wayne Dolciafino and the others were like whipped into a lather hoping for, you know, disaster and horror and apocalypse. But from outside, looking at the reporting in that, it was pretty even-handed. The thing they said was, you know, it's a tropical storm, so it could be a dud and, you know, just bring an afternoon thunderstorm, or it could be, you know,
it could sit most on top
people
of the
have lived
Gulf
in Houston
rain
long
and
enough.
Rain and rain.
It can be serious. I mean, well, I got flooded out of my house by a tropical storm that was nothing, that nobody was afraid of.
Yeah, it stopped and you were under red band and it stopped for a long time and just poured down rain.
Well, my only...
So, I mean, I knew that was a possibility, but like I said, the way people were preparing... Because here's the deal. Okay. Oh, my good. All right. A tropical storm's coming, and there could be flooding. So I'm going to go buy a whole bunch of bread.
Right.
Well, that's great. That's really going to help you out when you're flooded. You know, I mean, it's one thing if, like, there's a hurricane that could, like, knock out power lines for a week and your fridge doesn't work and stuff like that, and but if it's flooding, it's flooding, and like if you're either flooded or you're not.
Well, if high winds
people were really anticipating,
but the winds weren't very high. It was a tropical storm.
People want an apocalypse. They've been watching Walking Dead and all these other movies and all the, you know, doomsday preppers and all that kind of stuff, and they're ready. They're ready for society to just fall apart and they can, you know, have their bread and
well, to be fair,
the kings.
I mean, to be fair, we had that major rain event a couple of weeks ago.
That was unexpected.
That was completely unexpected.
It spooked people.
And it was bad. I mean, I know people. Ralph Logan lives in Wimberley. He lost his house and a couple of pets. I know people here in Houston that, you know, their houses got flooded out. There were, you know, a lot of problems.
Missouri City was turning
into Venice. I watched the water
come
halfway up my yard. I mean, I was like, I thought this is going to be it. This is like the bad one. and obviously I wasn't real thrilled about the idea of more rain coming.
Right.
And the storm did kind of materialize. You know, it's one thing if it's like, you know, out past the Gulf and coming in and building up strength. But this one just kind of came off the Yucatan Peninsula. And, hey, look, I'm a storm. Hey, hey. And we all remember Allison. We all remember a couple of weeks ago. And it was somewhat concerning. And I think they did the right thing to at least say, hey, you know, we're saturated. We could get some rain.
Right.
But
no,
I never felt like, you know, this was going to come blowing in like Katrina and knocking everything down. The only thing I was worried about is whether or not the heavy rain was going to happen when I was out on the road. I didn't want to be in a position to have to be out.
Where you were stuck somewhere.
Right. And that's most of the times when a storm is coming, that's my primary concern. I don't want to be stuck somewhere. I want to be home so I can, you know, watch the water rise there.
So you can watch your house get flooded in person.
I don't want to be separated from my family. When Hurricane Ike came in and even before that was a... What was the one before that?
Rita?
Rita. Rita came in and everybody evacuated, and it veered off at the last. I thought that was a good sign. And the same thing happened with Bill, too, is that, you know, I always believe that the longer it stays on course to hit us, the less chance it has of hitting us.
It's going to veer,
at the last minute, because they always do. I was talking with my wife about how, you know, companies... You know, how do they make the decision on whether or not to tell people to stay home, come to work? You know, people don't know what to do. Should I leave? Should I go to work? If I should go to work, my family's not going to go anywhere.
Because if you go, there will be trouble.
But if you stay,
it will be double. Right. So I don't know. It was like people got a little bonkers. I wasn't worried about like. I didn't think there anything was going to happen that I couldn't drive out of.
It just
ultimately
was the thing. It seemed like people were prepping for like a serious hurricane, instead of a tropical storm that could cause flooding.
Yeah, at work I got pulled into like I counted 15 people to like a business continuity disaster recovery meeting that had like a small army. We've never had 15 people in any kind of a meeting, even when we did have real hurricanes.
I would understand if there had been a run on like water pumps, like generator water pumps.
Yeah.
So somebody could try to, like, run on sandbags, right? I could see that.
Bread makers.
Well, you know, one thing I came to the conclusion when this was coming in and all this was happening this time around, I thought, these kind of things need to affect, like, everybody at the same time. Because you work for a company that's big enough, you know, you shut down the one office that's getting hit by a nothing hurricane or a real hurricane. Everybody else still is carrying on like usual. So there's just basically this hurricane-shaped hole in your company, and work still piles up. So I'm like, well, I know you guys got to work, but I'm debating whether or not I should go home. And I don't like that. I think everybody should. I think if something threatens one branch office of your business, that the whole business should shut down in solidarity.
I think it was during Rita. You know, everybody got in a big panic and like, there was like, basically the city told people, go ahead and leave. If you can leave now, you should just go ahead and leave. And, instead of following the evacuation plan, which was, you know, people closest to the coast leave. And then the next day, people in the next zone B or whatever, leave.
Everybody go right now.
Basically the mayor, which I think was Bill White at the time, which was like, it was actually, I think, the day before the people in the first zone were supposed to leave. He said, oh, yeah, looks bad. We're going to have to evacuate. If you can go ahead and leave, I recommend that you go ahead. We recommend you go ahead and leave. I recommend you go ahead and leave, whatever he said. And so what happened was, again, there was this super freak out paranoia. And everybody from Katy and the Woodlands and the Heights and everywhere started packing up and leaving. And so they filled up the roads, and then the people that were actually in the real evacuation zones couldn't get anywhere, you know? Like Fretz, who used to be on the show, he lives down in Clear Lake, and when he went to evacuate during the window when he was supposed to evacuate, it took him, I think, 10 or 11 hours to get from Nass Road 1 to 610 on 45.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not evacuating very effectively at that point.
Well, it's like that's the problem too, is that you can't make the determination of whether it's time to leave and abandon your job and everything soon enough. It's like by the time we thought we should probably leave during that mass exodus, it was too late to leave.
Yeah, if you didn't get out early, you were stuck.
You couldn't go. So, is it going to come here? Is it not? You know, by the time you actually think, okay, this is a problem, I better go, you're stuck.
Well, that's I don't know, part of my thing with all of this, I feel like when the weather people, not necessarily the city, I think that was a bad choice on their part, but when the weather people do that all the time, every time something comes up, they like, it's like the boy who cried wolf. Like, eventually people come desensitized to it.
I actually have talked to people in the weather business, you know, in that area. I'm not going to say specifically who, but, you know, on-air type folks. If they underplay it, if they talk about it reasonably, and then what might happen happens, then they take a big hit. If they hype it, you know, in other words, there's one snowflake in the woodlands, and so then they're, you know, running and screaming about winter apocalypse for this year, you know, and all the snow, chance of snow, you notice that one? It's like if snow is going to get anywhere in the state of Texas, they talk about it could possibly happen here.
So their perspective is that they would rather be drummed on some for overselling something.
They don't get sued for overselling it. They do get sued if they undersell it and somebody relies on that and then the worst happens and people get either very upset or else they actually sue.
I wonder if anybody sued the city of Houston during the Rita evacuation, because that was not underselling it and it caused a whole lot of problems.
Well, the thing about that, what's the first thing of government? Do policemen have speed limits? No. Do governments have liability where you can sue them? It's very difficult to get standing. The laws usually that they wrote usually say they're not on the hook for that kind of stuff.
All right.
So I doubt anybody had the standing.
We survived. The important thing is we survived. And, you know, there's yes. probably, you know, last year was a very calm storm season too. I think maybe that was people were kind of due for storm panic.
We may have a lot of new people in the last since something actually scary happened.
They were talking on the news that, you know, a lot of people have come here in the last couple of years that have never been through a storm.
No, yeah, Houston's been growing a lot for a number of years, so there may be a fair number of people that, have never experienced that at all, and so, they could be freaking out.
2 weeks after a surprise, you know, everybody is kind of
jumpy.
After surprise bad weather.
Well, that's kind of what happened with Rita,
there
right?
might be more of that. Because
everybody saw what happened in Katrina a few weeks before Rita. Yeah, and everybody's like, oh my God, that's not going to happen to me. I got to get out of here.
I'm getting all my Heineken now. Big screen TVs.
Well, I wasn't worried that it was going to get flooded necessarily. Like I said, I just didn't want to be stuck in it. I didn't want to go to the office and then not leave in time to get home before the water rose up or whatever. And there was at least a reasonable chance that whatever this was going to come ashore, sit here,
hang
and dump
a
bunch of rain.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe that storm 2 weeks ago. I mean, the worst of that storm was right over my house, like my neighborhood, my area of town, and it just rained and rained and rained and watched the news until the power went out, you know, telling us that, you know,
there's certain doom.
There was a new term they used. It was like a flash flood emergency because they said, like, it's not a warning. It's not an alert. This is right now. The waters are rising.
Sharknado. No, hold on.
There is a Sharknado.
I feel like I'm close, though.
Sharknado 4. No, it was like they called it a flash flood emergency. And there was this like bracket on the radar, and my house was like in the middle of that bracket.
Flash flood supercell warning.
A flunami.
Winter is coming, but it's rain instead of winter.
Drizzle is coming.
Anyway, we'll rebuild. after Tropical Storm Bill.
Just to put a geeky face on this, there's a CWAP program, which I think, of course, I don't have it in front of me now. It's
Does that come before DWAP?
It's right before DWAP. I think it's like a citizens weather observing program. It's put out by NOAA, and what you can do is if you have like any kind of home weather kit, you can actually connect it to the internet, and it becomes an Internet of Things thing, and then it reports, you know, all the data back up to NOAA, and then
it doesn't actually make you a news reporter though, where you
can
like
it makes you just as accurate as. No purchase necessary, I think, on that. Yeah.
I'm just thinking people should be able to click on your news station or your weather station for your info, and then you should be able to have a video. You
could probably always do it. I mean, the one upside to Houston getting bad weather or any kind of forecast of bad weather are the guy from Nova Scotia doing the forecast. So we were on there again a couple days ago, so that was good.
Yeah, I saw that. Jay posted it. I think I saw it before I saw Jay's posting of it, but...
You saw that in Houston, Texas.
And Galveston, right. Texas.
He's awesome.
Have your iPods charged. Have your iPhones charged.
That guy is awesome.
Wear your rain boots. Don't step in any puddles.
It looks like he's doing remote broadcasting now. He looked like he was outside.
Yeah, he was outside, not in his room, but he was in sunny Nova Scotia. So, yeah.
I think they should have a system where, you know, like Flicted was describing, except then there's like a bunch of bright lights out in front of your house, and when people, you know, on the app, when those lights come on, you have to run out there and do your inventory.
I'm surprised like a major network hasn't scooped him up. I mean, I would, like, you know,
you're all about the scooping.
Yep.
All right, well, welcome to the show. Glad you survived Tropical Storm Bill. We're gonna power on. Gonna go to San Antonio, where it also didn't flood much.
Only on the hilltops.
It only flooded on the high points. We're going to do Technology Bites InfoShot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bites InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Hey, so now we've got new things for you to worry about. You didn't get flooded? Well, as many as 600 million Samsung phones may be vulnerable to attacks that allow hackers to monitor the camera and microphone. Nice. Read incoming outgoing text messages and install malicious apps, a security researcher said. The vulnerability is in the update mechanism for a Samsung customized version of SwiftKey available on the Samsung Galaxy S6, S5, and several other Galaxy models. When downloading updates, the Samsung devices don't encrypt the executable file, making it possible for hackers in a position to modify upstream traffic, like someone on the same Wi-Fi network, to replace the legitimate file with a malicious payload. This was demonstrated Tuesday at the Black Hat Security Conference in London by Ryan Welton, a researcher with security firm Not Now Secure. The phones that come pre-installed with the Samsung IME keyboard, as Samsung markets its customized version of SwiftKey, periodically query an authorized server to see if updates are available for the keyboard app or any language packs that accompany it. Attackers in a man-in-the-middle position can impersonate the server and send a response that includes the malicious payload that's injected into a language pack update. Because Samsung phones grant extraordinarily elevated privileges to the updates, the payload is able to bypass protections built into the Android operating system that normally limit the access third-party apps have over the device. Isn't that nice? Not encrypted, no nothing, plus elevated privileges. It's way to go, Samsung. But, of course, if you have an iPhone or iOS and you're feeling superior, don't. A group of researchers from Indiana University and the Georgia Institute of Technology have found security holes in both iOS and OS X that allow a malicious app to steal passwords from Apple's keychain, as well as both Apple and third-party apps. The claims appear to have been confirmed by Apple, Google, and others. The published report offered the following quote: "We completely cracked the keychain service used to store passwords and other credentials for different Apple apps and sandbox containers on OS X, and also identified new weaknesses within the inter-app communication mechanisms on OS X and iOS, which can be used to steal confidential data from Evernote, Facebook, and other high-profile apps," unquote. Apparently, it reported the flaws to Apple in October of last year. At that time, Apple said it understood the seriousness of the flaws and asked the researchers to give it 6 months to address them before the exploit was made public. In February, Apple requested an advanced copy of the paper, yet the flaws remain present in the latest version of both operating systems. Oops. During tests, researchers were able to upload malware exploiting the vulnerabilities in both iOS and Mac app stores. Despite Apple's vetting, the compromised apps were approved for OS X and iOS. So that's nice. Basically, the best advice on this particular one, on the Apple and iOS one, is to use caution in deciding which applications you want to download, especially ones from unknown developers. Also, be alert on any occasion where you're asked to log in manually when that login is usually done by keychain. So there's on the hackery front. And on the punishment front, AT&T may get fined $100 million by the Federal Communications Commission for misleading customers about the unlimited data plan it sells. How were they misled? Well, it turns out that the unlimited data that was marketed to millions of customers had limits on it. Surprise. Specifically, AT&T, quote, severely slowed down the data speeds for customers with unlimited data plans and, quote, failed to adequately notify its customers that they could receive speeds slower than the normal network speeds AT&T advertised. Isn't that sweet? It's not the first time regulators have cried foul over this. In October, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, sued the mobile carrier for exactly the same thing. At the time, FTC noted that AT&T routinely cut speeds on devices with unlimited plans by 60 to 95% after they'd used as little as 2 gigs in a billing period. So the result was many everyday applications like web browsing, GPS, and streaming video are significantly slower and in some cases are severely impaired or rendered practically inoperable. So that $100 million, hopefully that'll make AT&T think about what they do with their throttling. Although a AT&T spokesman said that they will vigorously dispute the FCC's assertions and will file that complaint as soon as my damn unlimited phone plan loads our webpage. Just kidding. In other news, Reddit, and this is on getting sort of relatively secure. Following the leads of Google, Wikipedia, and Facebook, Reddit announced today that it will begin encrypting all of its traffic by the end of the month. Once July rolls around, users will see the increasingly common HTTPS header in Reddit URLs. The move comes as privacy advocates push for the encrypted protocol to be used universally across the internet, which has gained momentum after the recent revelations of widespread government snooping. Ironically, the federal government has itself called for all of its public-facing systems to be encrypted by the end of the year, despite its demands for security backdoors from websites that have already enabled encryption. And then this... kind of... the TLDR on it. It's from medium.com. And actually, if you go to geekradio.com, we have links to all the stories we're going to talk about tonight, or even some that we're not, if we don't get to them. There's an article from medium.com. There's a site of theirs called Backchannel. And it talks about how the internet works in Cuba. And essentially, there's not the internet in a network like we have, you know, where there's the wires running from place to place and all of that. They have something that's kind of like our old bulletin board system, except again, that had wires too. It's called El Paquete. And essentially it arrives weekly in most places in Cuba in the form of thumb drives loaded with enormous digital files. The drives make their way across the island from hand to hand by bus and by 1957 Chevy, their contents copied and the drive handed on. So it's in a way, it's like the old email systems, the earliest email bulletin board systems, where the bulletin board, you know, you'd put your mail on it and then every so often it'd kind of gather up all that mail and send it on to the next bulletin board and so on and so on. So in a sense, it's a very slow, high-capacity internet because, of course, it's gigs and gigs of stuff on those thumb drives. Someone, no one knows who, loads up the drives with online glitz and gets them to Cuban shores. As in the Hollywood system, there are distribution windows. If you can wait to watch your favorite show, you'll pay less. El Paquete plays to Cuban strengths and needs. Cubans, several people told the person who wrote the article, are great at sharing, and being paid to be part of the thumb drive supply chain is a respectable job in their economy. So imagine human internet going around by bus and 57 Chevy. They like to watch telenovelas and HBO series, and that's how it moves around. So there's more about the article, and it's just kind of fascinating to think, you know, I mean, that is a way that data could get around. So then after your big apocalypse, just stock up on thumb drives, and you can, you know, have your own, I don't know, on foot to internet, just like Cuba. And finally, sort of our top story, this is, you know, take note, because it's probably the only sports story you're going to ever hear on Technology Bites. Front office personnel for the St. Louis Cardinals, one of the most successful teams in baseball, this is according to the New York Times, are under investigation by the FBI and Justice Department prosecutors accused of hacking into an internal network of the Houston Astros to steal closely guarded information about players. And no, we're not talking about identity theft. We're talking about trying to find out about the players, scouting reports, proprietary statistics, internal discussions about trades. They've uncovered real evidence that Cardinals employees broke into the network. The officials did not say which employees were the focus of its investigation or whether the team's highest-ranking officials were aware of the hacking or authorized it. It is being led by the FBI's Houston field office and has progressed to the point that subpoenas have been served on the Cardinals and Major League Baseball for electronic correspondence. Law enforcement officials believe the hacking was executed by vengeful front office employees for the Cardinals who hoping to wreak havoc on Jeff Luhnow, I guess, L-U-H-N-O-W, the Astros general manager who had been a successful and polarizing executive with the Cardinals until 2011. It sounds like there was an intrusion that got people's attention, did not appear to be sophisticated. And then when they traced it back, it traced back to a house where a number of Cardinals employees had lived, oddly enough. Basically when Luhnow was with the Cardinals, the team built a computer network called Redbird that housed all of its baseball operations info. And after he left to join the Astros and took some front office personnel with him from the Cardinals, Houston created a similar program known as Ground Control. And so it had all the collective baseball knowledge of the Astros, according to a Bloomberg Business article. Essentially, it sounds like that Cardinals personnel concerned that he had taken their idea and proprietary baseball information to the Astros, examined a master list of passwords used by him and the other officials who had left when they worked for the Cardinals, and then tried using those passwords to get into the Astros network. So that's kind of sharp. Although in the weird part, last year some of the information from the Astros computers was posted online anonymously, according to the website Deadspin. Among the details that were exposed were trade discussions the Astros had with other teams. And Mr. Luhnow was asked at the time whether the breach would affect how he dealt with other teams. He said, quote, "Today I used a pencil and paper in all my conversations," he said. But the Major League Baseball notified the FBI and the authorities in Houston opened an investigation and then found that the network had been entered from a computer at a home that some Cardinals employees had lived in. And then it went from there. So now finally the geeks, the, the geeks are important on the baseball field. Besides, I guess, the money ball thing. Now it's the stealing the stats from the other team in their scouting reports. And that's the news.
All right.
I don't know if I'd call that hacking. I would just call that a great reminder to rotate your passwords.
Yeah, really. So especially when you leave someplace that has a list.
Yeah, they didn't really do anything. They just, you know, the guy went from one system to the other, so they just retried the passwords, and, you know, sure enough.
Essentially, it's like a very focused dictionary attack, because you got a real small dictionary.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume that there'd be over, you know, a few hundred different people in the organization. You know, they would have passwords and accounts and stuff. So, yeah, that's really small. They could probably do that by hand, just reading down a list, just having someone type it in, you know, break it in a couple of hours.
And if you have their basic, you know, if you know their kinds of passwords, if you had a list of all the passwords a person used, for instance, at a business, then you could also find the variations that they're that they're tending to use, and, you know, do some variations beyond what's in the list and get a lot more focused attack on their, you know, even if they've changed up their password, it may have similar patterns that you can find.
Yeah, it really moves that key space down. And not to keep going back to Mr. Robot, but you know, he kind of alluded to that. I think, you know, some of the stuff that the guy on the show, Mr. Robot, was doing was he was getting the key spaces down really small. It sounded like he maybe, and I know there's stuff that you can get off the shelf that does this, but, you know, things where you load in pet names and you load in birth dates and you load in everything else, and it, you know, it takes, instead of going through like brute forcing every single combination known, you know, in the world, it goes and it, you know, messes with the pet name and the birth year, and it throws all those around, so it maybe just checks a couple thousand instead of, you know, thousands of thousands. So does that come back on, Jason? You're the one that got me hooked on that. Can you tell me when episode 2 comes out?
Because it's been a while. Coming out in July, I think.
July? Okay.
I'm sorry. Let's see.
The spoiler you need to give out is, hey, this doesn't start up again for 6 weeks.
I had a very similar feeling. It's actually June 24th.
Okay, that's not bad.
Not far away. A few days now. No, I heard about it. Chris Goggins from Legion of Doom, Eric Bloodaxe, Facebooked something about it, and I went and saw it, and I did recognize that, wow, if this is as good as they say, I'm not going to get to watch anymore, because I'm really enjoying binge watching. As you know, I stalled out on House of Cards in the first season, and I just got back into it, and man, that is a good show. That is a really good show, and I'm just glad that I have all those episodes. I wish that I ignored Breaking Bad up until now, so that I'd have
so you could binge watch it.
Yeah, because I could watch it again, have it new.
I've started watching Breaking Bad like 3 times now, and one time I only got through the first episode, and once I got through the first 3 episodes.
You could watch the Spanish version.
Oh, that would
be good. The Colombian version? Yeah.
I think it's the Colombian version, yeah. What's it called?
Metastasis or something?
Breaking Mallow?
It's like Metastasis or Metastasis, where the T-A and then it's got the same, you know, periodic table motif. And because you start reading it and it talks about Walter Blanco, yeah. And he gets cancer, and then he ends up making meth with one of his chemistry students. It's like, oh, see, that sounds familiar. And then you look at it again, and it's like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, it's an exact recreation of the show.
Yeah, that's what I had heard, like scene for scene.
It was, licensed to do so. It's not trying to, it's not like a counterfeit. It's not like.
I'm just wondering if all the, like, bad people that Walter Blanco ends up having to deal with are Americans.
Americans, yeah.
That could be an interesting retelling of the whole Breaking Bad story, you know, from the other side of the border.
This could go all around the world. I mean, the Bollywood version would be probably hilarious.
It would. Well, at any rate, so yeah, the Mr. Robot show resumes, and you know, speaking of binge watching, I tried to watch it, and I'm not a big fan of the show, but the Aquarius show, which has got David Duchovny, and it's set It's a fictionalized account of
hunting for Manson, right?
Hunting for Manson, yeah, Charles Manson. And the station that's airing that did dump all of it to, like, you know, watch on demand. The whole season came out on demand if you have cable or
whatever. Is that based on a movie? Because wasn't there a movie about, or no, it was something else?
Helter Skelter? No.
No. It was
the,
like,
Aquarius thing. I think you're maybe putting it with the serial killer, the one that they never caught.
Son of Sam.
The Zodiac killer? Or
the Zodiac.
Oh, the Zodiac killer.
What about X-Files? Is that coming out?
Yes.
Okay, because that had me concerned when I saw that David Duchovny was tied up at Aquarius. I'm like, okay, what does that mean for X-Files?
Aquarius is a limited run because
they've
only got so much time before Charles Manson gets captured and put in jail that they can make a serial out of this. So I think it's a 10-episode show, and that's it. Nine and done.
And every episode, Charles Manson escapes their clutches. That wily Charles Manson.
Did any of y'all watch the Daredevil series that Netflix dumped all at once?
I haven't watched it yet.
I did. I would say that is binge-worthy.
Yeah, it was good. But they green-lighted a second season,
and
the second season is going to have the Punisher.
Yeah.
And the guy playing Punisher is actually I'm blanking. The guy from Walking Dead. The cop from Walking Dead. Yeah. Not the main character, but his partner.
The Shane guy?
Shane,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shane is going to play the Punisher, which I could see him, you know, making a good Punisher character.
And these are, just to be clear, these are all comic book spinoffs. Are they DC or are they Marvel? Or
Marvel.
Marvel? Okay.
Marvel. Punisher and Daredevil are Marvel.
Daredevil. I watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I binge watched it, and it's fine. It's not it wasn't spectacular to me, but I thought Daredevil was better.
Yeah, I haven't watched. I was a huge fan of Nick Fury, but I haven't watched any of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I haven't watched any of the Avengers movies. There's a lot I haven't watched, but I did watch all of the Daredevil stuff, which
I
thought was
good.
I
started watching the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show without having watched the Avengers movies, and was not clear on the whole resurrection of that guy.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything so far. Are they worthwhile?
What?
It sounds like.
Well, the main guy, what's the
Coulson had died at the end of the
Coulson
Avengers
died
movie.
At the end of the Avengers movie, and he shows up in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Everybody kind of knows he was dead, but he only remembers that he was on a vacation in Tahiti or something. and I'm not getting any of this. So I finally watched the Avengers movie, and I'm like, oh, he died. Okay, let me go Google this a little bit and see what's going on here. Oh, okay, I get it now. But yeah, there's apparently. And I didn't get the one. Did you see the Avengers movie?
No.
Did you see the Avengers movie, Pete?
Yeah, I did.
What was the reference where the Hulk or Bruce Banner, they're talking about being in there's a quote in the movie where he talks about being in an enclosed thing under so many feet of water or something. And that's going to work out well.
Yeah,
it was a reference to something, but I could never figure out what the reference was. And I mean, that's these comic book things. Since I didn't read a lot of comic books growing up, shame on me. But those movies have you can tell. It's unfortunate that you can tell. I guess it's good for the people that are in the know, but you could tell they're making a reference. It's like this scene is all about making a reference to either a previous movie or the comic book or something.
I'm curious about the new Fantastic Four coming out. Because you know, Invisible Girl and Johnny Blaze, the torture brother and sister. But in the movie, I guess Invisible Girl's, well, when she's not invisible, she's white, and Johnny Blaze isn't. So I don't know if they're still supposed to be brother and sister.
Ooh, edgy.
Or exactly.
Now he's her brother, but yeah, not quite the same way.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, maybe they're going to say one of them was adopted, or I don't know.
Maybe Johnny Blaze just identifies as black. Sorry. Twitter can go nuts now.
One of my favorite lines from the Avengers movies was when they, who's the archer fellow? The guy that
Green Arrow?
Hawkeye.
Oh, when, Marvel Hawkeye. Yeah.
Yeah. When one of the other superheroes, Tron or whatever.
Tron.
picked him up. He says, "Let's go, Legolas."
Is he Iron? Was it Iron Man?
Yeah.
I haven't seen the
Gandalf.
Movie. So.
Gandalf,
that's funny. He called him Legolas.
So did you guys see, Pete, did you see where Russia is calling, or they're saying like, hey, we want to see some backup data on the moon landings? They're kind of calling out NASA on the whole moon landing thing. They want some explanations as to where the footage went that we lost in, what was that, 2011? And they also want to know why we haven't, like, ever living one see about 400 kilograms of space rock we collected between 1969 and 1972.
It hit
the news earlier this afternoon, but it looks like I can't tell if it's saber rattling or what it's going on. I think it's because we made some allegations about, you know, Russians and the Olympic Committee. So maybe they're saying, oh, yeah, NASA, we want to see some stuff, but it's still kind of odd.
Oh, or yeah, the FIFA thing, the World
the
Cup
FIFA
soccer
thing. That's right.
Deal is now. So now it's going to just get crazy. You know, I guess it's one of those where if they want to play that sort of game, I wish we had the sort of scientific wherewithal that you could have, you know, somebody from NASA or Obama or somebody go over to Russia with a big bag and dump that lander that they crashed into the moon like a few days before we landed, like dump the remaining pieces of that thing on Putin's desk and say, do you believe us now? Drop the mic and walk out.
Here's the actual line.
It's that Russian lander. They tried. They had some lander that the Russians like, you know, it was not a human mission, but they like launched it at the moon and it slammed into the moon a short time before Apollo 11 got to the moon and we had men on the moon. So if they were doubting our moon story, that would be a great one. Is basically, you know, dump that in a bag of parts on his desk and walk out.
He's saying that he acknowledges the moon landings happened, but he's demanding answers as to how the valuable documentation of the moon landings went missing. This is Vladimir Markin. He's one of Russia's investigative committee members.
I thought that was pretty already well documented how that happened.
How stuff went missing?
Yeah.
Yeah, how the tapes got reused.
Overwritten during the lean years.
I suppose.
I'm sure this guy is also, you know, pounding on his desk and looking for old Doctor Who's as well, right?
Well, couldn't we just say, okay, well, show us Stalin's body. I mean, you know, we can see Lenin's body, but show us Stalin's body.
Yeah, because they tried to preserve him the same way, but I don't think with as much success.
It looks like most of the rock is being kept in Houston at the Johnson Space Center. Right? I say Houston.
I forgot what building.
Building 31N, the Lunar Sample Laboratory Facility.
Which I never got to go into.
So maybe Russia should go to NASA.gov and read the info pages.
How about if they just take the Johnson tour and maybe they can...
Slip the tram driver at 20.
I don't remember what show it was. There was some guy had stolen, you know, 20 years ago or something, or 30 or something like that, had stolen the safe that had a bunch of the moon rocks in it. And when he tried to sell it to a guy in Belgium who was a big collector of that stuff, the guy ratted him out. And so then, you know, they went to make the deal in Florida or something. And suddenly the guy said, because the guy who did it, you know, the crook, basically he served his time and he's out of jail now. It was, I guess, in the 90s that he did it. He said suddenly he noticed that all the people who had been like in the restaurant where they talked to the potential buyer were all nearby and around the hotel room where they were at. And suddenly everybody had guns and, you know, on the floor and that kind of thing. And they caught him, but he couldn't open that. He thought he could open the safe. He basically just drove over to the building where it was kept and got there, thought he could open the safe, but he couldn't. So then they got a dolly and wheeled the, you know, 600-pound safe out the back and put it in his truck and drove off. But he got caught, so they still have all the rocks, but that I'm sure they're more secure now.
Protect the rocks.
Oh, that's they're crazy valuable. I mean, the people who would like to get their hands on some. Hopefully there's a lot of fakes out there.
Yeah, hopefully that happened later than the 90s, because in 2002, a couple of interns did the exact same thing. So
maybe it was 2002. Maybe he didn't serve that much jail time.
I hope, but you never know. You never know.
I doubt it happened twice, but I mean, they had the sort of the reenactment thing. I don't remember what show it was that did it, but they were talking about it, and it's kind of like, wow, you know, in a sense, it's sort of stupid because, I mean, he stole like all of it. So it was like a huge percentage of all the moon rocks on the planet. And you kind of go, who's going to buy that from you, and how are you going to hide that you're the one that sold it?
When you take all your moon dollars and try to deposit them in your moon bank account.
Only lunar dollars.
All right. So we're winding down the first hour of the show here. And we're going to have to take a short break here. In other news, non-technology related, there's talk about removing Hamilton from the $10 bill.
And replace him with?
A woman.
Who I thought it was Jackson from the 20.
No, Hamilton from the 10. It's been kind of sporadically popping up in my Twitter feeds, and I did a news story. I did a news search on it, and sure enough, they're talking about giving him the boot. So currency is changing. I'm sure the Russians already have the templates from their hack.
Well, actually, this one, I guess, is that they're actually going to do it. I think before there was a movement to change the one of the bills and put a woman on it. But
yeah, this is,
of course, CNN in 2004 thought that they'd put Reagan's picture on there.
Speaking of
presidential, she's not a woman.
Oh, there's the noise. All right. Well, that noise tells us it is time to wind down the first hour. I see Flicted is entertaining a possible phone call, so we'll see if that. We had a great phone call last week from Max, the NASA guy. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back after these messages with more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
L. Joy Williams, Pacifica's National Election Supervisor, with an important message. This summer, we will hold separate but simultaneous listener and staff elections for half the seats on the local station board. Your station needs not only your hard-earned dollars, but your voice, your expertise, and your vote. Candidate nominations will open on June 15th. To vote or run in the upcoming election, you must be a member of the station by July 14th. For listeners, this means a donation of at least $25 or 3 hours of volunteer station work between July 15th of last year and July 14th of this year. Criteria for staff voters are different. To see the election calendar, sign up for election updates, and learn how to get involved, please visit elections.pacifica.org or call me, the National Election Supervisor, at 347-699-2914. You can also send me an email at nes@pacifica.org. Your voice and your vote in Pacifica are important. Remember, you must be a member of the station by July 14th in order to participate in the election. So don't delay, renew, or join today.
You're tuned in to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Oh, it's Saturday.
Hello, my friends. This is Rick Izquierdo, along with Cleotis Saturday. And Buck. Welcome you to tune in every Saturday on KPFT 90.1 FM at 9 o'clock until noon for the Lone Star Jukebox. Roots rock, Americana, country music at its best, great interviews, and we always have some great giveaways. Join us every Saturday to kick off your weekend on the Lone Star Jukebox at 9 to noon on KPFT 90.1 FM Pacifica Radio.
And we're back.
We are back. Wow, Rick is scared of.
And we're going to bring back the Barrett time.
Barrett time is all about blowing his nose and wiping off his screen.
Yeah, that's kind of where we are right now.
Sinus infection.
Time.
Well, Technology Bites is back. We're glad you're still around listening to us this evening. Barrett's not feeling too great, but he's being a trooper, sticking it out with us. It's not communicable, is it?
No, it's just, I think, from too much flying and not enough sleep.
It's too many Italian bugs in your nose from motorcycling around Italia.
I'm pretty sure it was getting stuck on the plane for 36 hours on the way back.
Yeesh.
And all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was rough coming back home.
Well, at least you had a nice long vacation.
No, it was nice. Yeah, it was nice to be out that long. It was good.
Yeah, I'm watching, I guess there's another volcano erupting somewhere in the Orient or Taiwan or something. And I'm worried that the Ring of Fire is going to go all acting up and we'll have volcanic activity when we go to New Zealand, I'm hoping.
That's good, though, huh? Wouldn't it be good?
Not if it disrupts everything and burns down the places we're going to stay.
Don't you want to go through the apocalypse in a country that you know nothing about?
Well, I think there'd be far worse places than New Zealand to get trapped by an apocalypse, but, you know.
That's true. You can hang out with the Maori and do the cool welcome dance thing.
Well, find the elves or the hobbits as soon as you can.
Yeah, when we were in Iceland, there was the threat of one of the volcanoes was kind of starting to act up a little bit and then kind of did go off after we left. It wasn't bad like the one before that in 2009 or whatever that was disrupted all the air traffic. But
well, if you trigger volcanoes, then do us all a favor and don't go to Yellowstone.
An American volcano would be cool. I mean, that would just be the disaster.
Mount St. Helens all over again.
Yeah,
but is that 1980
yeah, not the you don't want the Yellowstone one to go off.
No,
that's one of the like sort of seven top Armageddon scenarios would be if the volcano there went up.
Yeah.
There was a birthday last week that we missed. PHP turned 20. So I don't know if people are familiar with PHP. I guess it's PHP Hypertext Preprocessor is what they call it now, which is recursive. Started out, I guess, 20 years ago as personal homepage. It's like a set of loose CGI scripts, you know, an API to wrap around CGI stuff to where if you wanted to, you know, process like web variables for a or form data for a web page, it made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then now I think it's powering
it's
Facebook.
Like they took server-side scripting and converted it into a compiled binary that used a markup language like HTML.
Yeah, yeah. HTML wasn't even the first wave. It wasn't even a consideration.
But PHP probably is like an open source. I don't know what the origin points are. I would assume PHP is an open source version of ColdFusion. Because I think ColdFusion might have been before PHP.
Or is an open source alternative at the very least where they left it open so anybody could use it.
Because I did ColdFusion before I had heard of PHP. So it's possible that's not right. But I always assumed that PHP was basically the open source guys saying, wow, ColdFusion's interesting, so let's make a
PHP
open free
predates
version.
ColdFusion by about 6 months, 9 months. They're right about the same time. They both came out right before the browser wars hit. Version 1, I'm seeing ColdFusion hit in 95, and PHP was out early 95.
Okay.
Right around the same time. And then version 2, ColdFusion had hit 1996. So very, very close. And then I want to say that what else came out around that time? Bum-ba-dum.
Java.
Java, yeah. Was Java a few years earlier, though? I want to say Java came out like in the late 80s, and then it kind of had a foothold by 91, 93, somewhere in there.
I thought it seems like Java was a thing that was more of a I thought that was very internet-y. That was Bill Joy in that, where it was going to run on any kind of machine. And it seemed like Java was around, was something that was getting talked about in the early days of the show. But
looks like one of the first versions came out in 91, and they were kicking it around maybe a little bit before that.
Yeah, although it really like came out, since 1995, Java has changed our world and our expectations. This is from Oracle, who owns that. basically they started working on it in 91, but it like came out where people could use it in 95, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Java came out, JavaScript, especially JavaScript, came out of ECMAScript. So it was kind of borrowed. It kind of existed a while before it got branded. Before the whole branding thing kind of happened. But yeah, but all these languages, it's kind of weird. 20 years old since, the web scripting languages popped up that are still around and still, arguably very, very strong and definitely in use today.
Why is KD5 wants to know if we can take two calls at the same time as he went to be on the air. We got Max on hold.
I mentioned that, and that's probably why.
Yeah, it'd be hard for the callers to hear each other. But if you want to post questions to Max on the IRC, you could do that as well. All right, well, we've got Max on the phone, and Max was so entertaining last week that we'll see unless, he's...
Since Lee wasn't here last week and would have loved to have talked to him, then doing it again, I'll be just like, salt that wound.
All right, well, I see other calls coming in all of a sudden for some reason, so maybe that one of them is KD5. All right, so let's go ahead and put Max on the air, and if you double tap him,
you want me to bring him on, or is that going to be Flicted? Is he doing
Bruce's
job?
You'll do it. You'll double tap it so he doesn't go
Flicted
away.
Flicted is doing something.
He's screening a call. Go ahead, double tap
on
it.
On Max?
No, he's screening. He's not. Is he talking to Max?
It looks like he was talking to Max, although there
no, he's on the second line, the green ones.
Okay, Max is on line one.
Yes.
So we want to talk to Max.
Double tap it. All right. Hey, Max, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Okay. I mentioned to your call screener that the computer technology program is awesome in so many respects, in addition to personalities. Since computers are in everything, you can literally cover the entire field. Let's tackle sports.
Sports. Technology sports.
Yeah, and the situation with the Astros and Belichick videoing defense calls. With the New England Patriots, one of the problems with professional sports, especially in Houston, where we do not have a media that has some regional clout. Chronicle is good, but it's owned, out of San Francisco, and it can only go so far. And when the Jones Foundation gave up Chronicle and KTRH and Channel 11, that was a real hit, a bad blow to Houston's chances for being a regional media cloud. And without a media cloud, our sports teams, without a media cloud and without public ownership of the teams, I don't think that the teams that have more than five players on the court at any one time are ever going to bring a championship to Houston. And the reason is the budget for that many players being on the field, in order to make the kind of money they want to make, they have to pay a lot to a couple of stars, and they build them up, and the fans are so gullible that they'll keep coming as long as the owners continue getting a couple of stars and get the local media to build them up, people will keep coming in the hopes that this year they'll finally make it with this buildup of these new stars. And it just simply doesn't happen. Basketball is a little different. You've only got five guys.
I don't know that I want to necessarily turn this into a sports conversation, Max.
I hear you.
I think that that might be a little dry for our listeners.
The other topic that y'all covered, interesting one, was to go in history and revisit the Wank Worm. War Against Nuclear Killers is what the Wank stood for, that was released by the son of the mathematician who was the chief technical advisor to the NSA, I think, National Security Agency. His son released that Wank Worm, which infested mostly digital equipment computers.
Right.
And the scientist directorate and the engineering directorate at the Space Center used digital computers. And one of the interesting things was in the series of questions that the author put, he would send these kind of comical questions to whoever was online. Suddenly the screen question came up. Have you heard of the new German microwave? And the answer was, yeah, it seats 500. That was in the Wank Worm. Then
I'm gonna let you go at this point. I don't think that's an appropriate. Go ahead and drop that.
I hit him once, but there we go.
All right, yeah. I'm not. You know, I mean, just a little kind of questionable. We had a great conversation with Max last week about the space program because he was NASA for
but
a
now
long
he's
time.
Sports and
now it's the conversation's drifting a little bit.
And
so.
I want to say the guy that did the worm he was talking about.
This Robert Morse.
Yeah, it was Australian or New Zealand was the author.
Robert Morris?
No. That's not the same worm. He's talking about two different worms.
Originally, he was talking about the Robert Morris worm.
No, he came over.
When he was talking to me on the phone.
Oh no, this time he was talking about the Wank. There actually is a WANK, which it was named that as a tongue in cheek, double entendre kind of things. It's kind of whatever anyway. But that's what I thought he was talking about because he said that name several times.
Yeah, he said it specifically, and it was about DEC computers. I looked it up when he mentioned it on the air, and
it was
from 1989 that attacked DEC VMS computers. Let's see, it says that Barrett said it was Australians. The Melbourne police thought the worm was created by two hackers who used the names Electron and Phoenix. It's on Wikipedia, it says Julian Assange was believed to be involved, but he does not acknowledge this. So he sort of was showing up in the late 80s. I guess that was his prep for WikiLeaks.
You're thinking about the Morris worm, which is a little bit different,
but it was right around the same time.
It was
DECnet, though, right?
Yeah. I think it was DECnet.
I know it affected Vax VMS systems, so I think it was DEC specific.
Yeah, DEC Vaxes. Okay, yeah.
And I think it traveled through a problem in the finger command.
The finger. I remember finger. And you could finger bang somebody on a. You could like find out who is connected to a server.
It was almost like
seeing who's connected to a website using tracers.
Well, it was a listing of information about a user account on a server to where you could give first name, last name, the room number, their telephone number. You could actually put a .plan file up, which some people put like graphics in, but it would just more or less be a note that if anyone quote unquote fingered you, it would show them this information.
Yeah, it was like Who.
Yeah, which was actually really cool back in the day.
Except
too.
Has more information than Who.
Yeah, well, at least back in the day, you could actually, without even logging into a server, you could say, "Hey, show me who else is logged into the server."
Right.
This was like early internet. A lot of the stuff was running kind of pre-internet.
Yeah, I actually got in a lot of trouble doing that. I did cooperative education, and I would get bored at work, And so I would just pick random IP blocks and just run the finger command on random IPs.
See who was out there.
And then I would see who was on the accounts, see who's on the systems. And if I saw somebody's name who seemed interesting or whatever, I would send them an email and say, hey, you don't know me, but I saw you were logged in, and I was just wondering, like, who you are and what you do, or because they had an interesting plan file or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I did this from my work account. And I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then a few days later, or maybe the next day, maybe I'd been doing it for a few days because I got bored at work a lot. And I came in the morning, and there was a note from basically the head of the computer department. I was in the engineering department. It was the head of the computer department that said, when you get in, come see me immediately. I was like, oh, man, what did I do? Because I did tend to get in trouble because I did stuff with the systems that you weren't necessarily supposed to do all the time. And so I walked down there, and I was like, what's going on? And he's like, we've had several complaints from system administrators that somebody from our account's been hacking their systems, and it comes back to you because the only anomalous...
All the emails were from you.
The only anomalous event is that this person got a weird email from your account.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, okay, I haven't been hacking anything, but, I mean, I did send that email. And then he's like, this is what the email said. Hey, you don't know me, but blah, blah. I'm like, oh, yeah, that does sound bad. Yeah, well, they had stuff deleted off their computer during this time frame, and they're saying it was you. I'm like, no, I didn't do anything except send that email.
Bad coincidence.
And he was like, well, I didn't think you really probably did it, but, you know, they said, so I had to talk to you. I was like, oh, man, my picture's probably up in, like, you know, data centers. Like, you know, if you get an email from this person, your system is being compromised. But then I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, it's funny. Probably the fact is it's actually a computer that non-computer people are using that are, like, you know, doing data entry or something. And they get this thing, and they don't even really understand email in general. And then they get this email that's weird, and they don't know what they're doing. And they accidentally delete data that they were working on. And then they're like, this data's gone, and I was working on it. And then they blame it on me.
Yeah, I love that. I had this week a client who I set up their phone so it would be on the Wi-Fi network at the office at their office where I do support, and then they had some problem with they couldn't send an attached image in their email on their phone. And they were sure that it was because they were hooked up to the Wi-Fi network. And I told them, you know, when two things happen close together, that doesn't guarantee that that one caused the other.
Yeah, a couple of days ago at my current job, I had to send an email that said, in this case, I don't think correlation is causation.
It's the first place, the good first place to look. You know, if your machine's compromised, you look at what in software you just most recently installed. But when it's doing something really basic, like connecting to a network, then that usually doesn't affect how other software operates. But just very, and their email account keeps defaulting to some account they don't normally use.
I'm pretty sure being connected to Wi-Fi would not do that.
right. But I don't know. I do have some. I do have some bite of the apple stuff. If we want to,
you probably had this in science because I did look through the show prep information, and I saw it listed. But I don't remember what section it was in. Somebody called in a little bit ago and wanted to make sure that we talked about Rosetta.
Yeah, that's in the science. Science piece.
Okay. I told him that we probably that I saw it, and so we'd probably get to it at some point, but yeah, I just wanted to make sure and mention it so that we did talk about it at some point.
Awesome. Does anybody have the sound file or do we just want to go right into it?
Let's just go right into it. It's a little too
okay.
Halloween-y.
Well, it's a fairly quick one, but
the bite of the apple.
Bum bum bum.
Okay.
So anyways,
that was
now
the improv
version. One thing on the Apple front is you can now reserve an Apple Watch to buy at the store. if that's something that's of interest to you.
Like they have it at the store, or you reserve it and they send it to the store and then you pick it up?
They have them in the stores, but you have to have – basically Apple says all watch models are only on offer via reservation, which means you can't just walk into a store and buy one without at least reserving it on your iPhone just before you head inside. Reservations begin at 8 a.m. each day, and Apple advises buyers that their selection might become unavailable before they complete the reservation process due to high demands.
Yeah, I was going to say they probably have pretty limited – I mean, because there's so many variations, they're only going to have limited ones at stores, I would think.
Yeah, so just tell them you want the rose gold one and then, but then settle for the others.
Do you have any information about the demand? I mean, is demand pretty high for Apple Watches?
The tough part is the demand certainly seems to exceed the supply. You know, because they or else they'd have plenty around and they wouldn't still be doing the reservation thing. Apparently, like the 42 millimeter space black edition is really not available anywhere, which I think is because of a combo of difficulty of production and demand.
Were they still having issues with the bands, or where were they having issues? Was it making the actual the headpieces, the units?
I think it was the units themselves. Although I know that some of the bands they had problems with. But it's like apparently like at the main New York store, most versions, the 42 millimeter and 38 millimeter are pretty much – the 38 millimeter is more plentiful, which I'm guessing is because there's less demand for it. I'm assuming mostly it's guys and they want the larger screen. So, you know, obviously the thing about it is the with the reservations thing, it tells you the availability of what models. Excuse me. Darn that tropical storm Bill. It made me sneeze. No. But it tells you if models are available in any stores near you. And so that then it's there when you go in. So it's not like you make the reservation and then walk in and they go, yeah, no, we don't have that one for you. So you can at least be sure going in. On the interesting kind of rumor stuff, I think maybe we mentioned it last week, but there's sort of more detail. A larger iPad, you know, there's been talk about like a 12-inch iPad. The larger iPad is hinted at by iOS 9's scalable software keyboard. You know, Worldwide Developers Conference was last week. They were talking to devs. And they were getting a big part of it was getting devs used to the idea that the best way to design app experiences is with size fluidity in mind. Mostly, you know, ostensibly they were discussing best practices for supporting the iPad's new split screen multitasking interface, which just, you know, in case you got excited about it, you better have an iPad Air 2 because it doesn't work on anything less. But apparently in them talking about it, people couldn't help but think about the rumors swirling of a 12-inch iPad Pro at the same time. Now developer and regular code sleuth Steve Troughton Smith has discovered more evidence of the same within the beta software. iOS 9 contains a change to UI keyboard, the element that provides Apple's default software keyboard to apps, that makes the interface scalable to a size way larger than previously available. Split-screen multitasking doesn't change the size requirements of the iPad's keyboard in and of itself either, since the software keyboard simply comes up and spans both open apps operating at the same size as normal. So if it's coming up larger, that means that they think there will either be a lot more pixels or a bigger screen. Last they heard, this is a TechCrunch, fall looked like a likely time frame for an iPad Pro announcement and launch. With multitasking and the new MacBook design, the line between Mac and iPod, well, the iPad is definitely blurring, and it'll be interesting to see if it gets fuzzier later this year. So they do seem to be trying to make the iPad more of a working, a work device, as opposed to a software consumption device or a media consumption device. And a bigger screen like that would certainly start blurring, you know, start making it a lot closer between, you know, whether you should use an iPad with a 12-inch screen or use a laptop with a 12-inch screen. Although the prices might be very similar. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And then there was the like craziest article.
27 inch iPad.
No, worse than that. This one is just like downright like what? The headline, this is from the Wall Street Journal. The headline, why Apple should kill off the Mac. Yeah. basically the theory, it's by a guy named Christopher Mims in the Wall Street Journal. And essentially he says that Apple is made up of people and its leaders only have so much time. And so that basically they don't have enough time to keep making computers, so they should dump that and focus on their other stuff.
They have so much money, though. Why couldn't they just spin off another division that focuses on computers?
Right. Or hire some more folks. I mean, you know, that the idea that they should give that up. I mean, they still make money off of it. It's certainly, you know, it's sort of a crazy. It's not like they're having this, you know, it's not like they're losing money on it. It's not like they're losing market share. They make plenty off of it as far as what they're doing. And ditching that to go to all iPads or something seems just kind of insane.
I think this guy was focusing on the second part of the Steve Jobs quote, stay young, stay foolish.
I don't work for one of the most successful technology companies in the world, but if I did, this would be my suggestion.
Make it not one of the most successful technology companies in the world.
Obviously, yeah. They're too successful.
Oh, well, one of his arguments is that they don't have enough people and they're working so hard. And, you know, if they release a car and Apple TV and you just kind of, he makes it sound like the computers are taking away from doing those other things.
There have been a lot of responses to that. I think that the one I liked the most, someone had 3 points. And the first point was lots of companies make more than 3 great products. You know, you can look at GE, you can look at a few others.
Well, I was just thinking of like, not necessarily American companies, but like Japanese companies. Man, those guys,
Sony, yeah,
they
make
everything. Crazy, you know, like, yeah. Samsung or Mitsubishi or Hyundai, which is not Japanese,
they make boats, screens, cars,
they make like heavy
plane
lift
engines,
equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and radios. So yeah, it's a wide variety of things.
Yeah, so I figured that was a good one to kind of.
So what were the second and third points?
The other parts were maintaining an old product line is very easy. So, you know, if Apple had never been in the PC market, don't get in.
It's low effort, yeah, for a continued profit.
Yeah, and also PCs aren't obsolete. I mean, that's one of the things.
Everybody
wants to, all the forward
thinkers, yeah, want to make that happen, but yeah, it's not there.
Yeah, it's not. And really, I think the Mac, I mean, it's a strategic asset for Apple, and this was, you know, one of their points too. It's, you know, just you can change the Mac, you can kill off the present Mac and you have it re-evolve, but keep the name just because there's so much
they can,
you know,
make it evolve into like the Apple TV size.
Well, I mean, the pretty much everyone I'm looking at right now in the studio is carrying, you know, some kind of version of a MacBook Air, and Macs look nothing like this, you know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, 20 years ago, and they were still Macintoshes, quote unquote Macs. So yeah, keep the Mac name. And that other guy should stay in journalism. Don't get in tech.
Well, you know, I think maybe the Wall Street Journal, you know, there's only so they're trying to cover so many different areas. Maybe they should stop covering business so that they can have more time to focus on the future.
Well, maybe if they didn't focus on publishing a daily like newspaper, they could do more time spending, you know, doing research on tech. So you
making
core,
online content. They could, yeah, be BuzzFeed if they only, yeah, stopped like putting out dead tree editions.
They could just,
you know, that's what somebody should write. You know, that's where somebody from Apple should write their response editorial.
Multinational stops printing paper. Should, you won't believe what happened next.
They should focus on their three core competencies, walls, streets, and journals.
Paywalls.
They are paywalls, yeah. I don't like that.
The quirky secret behind the 10 sexiest CEOs.
Lord. But speaking of Apple news, while we're on the subject of Apple, I actually had a coworker come up to me today, and he hardly ever comes to my desk. He hardly ever really even talks to me, but we were talking yesterday and had a great conversation. So today he shows up at my desk, and I hate it when people show up at my desk because they're never there for anything good. But he shows up at my desk. He goes, "Hey, Jay, ask me what time it is." And I said, and I said something that I said I didn't want to ask him the question. He goes, "No, really, ask me what time it is." I said, "What time is it?" And he holds up his Apple Watch.
Oh, okay. I was hoping it was going to be peanut butter jelly time.
But he doesn't have a Mac.
No, he's Mac. He's a coworker that has bought his own Mac and brought it to work and has deployed it as his own workstation. He's just big Mac monitor, MacBook Air in a docking slot.
I was hoping maybe he went and got the watch, but he didn't have an iPhone.
No,
really very functional.
He's bitten the apple.
He drank the apple flavored Kool-Aid fully.
Yeah.
He's making another.
Here's
batch.
How you can push back. Go get Fallout 4.
I want
it. And it has a real life Pip-Boy, the like little, they use it as the like kind of info screen for you to find stuff if you've ever played. I don't know if you've ever played Fallout.
I have played Fallout. I love it. Now, so it comes with a real Pip-Boy.
You pair it with your phone. You pair it with your phone, and so there's this giant. It's about. It looks like it's a good 5 or 6 inches wide, green screened Pip-Boy that you can put on your wrist, and your smartphone powers it to powers it so that you can use it to when you're playing Fallout 4. You know, basically it does the in-game support, and if you buy it, it actually works. For in-game support for Fallout 4, which just came out.
Is it actually out?
I was about to say, when does Fallout 4 come out? That's not like...
A version of Fallout 4 called Fallout 4 Pip-Boy Edition will ship on November 10th.
Okay,
Same day the game is generally released.
I don't know what
this... retail price of $120.
I want to talk about stuff that's out like tomorrow.
Is this like a gamer term?
Yeah, it's a game.
Fallout.
Oh, I understand Fallout is... But
the Pip-Boy is the...
I don't know what that
Fallout
is.
Fallout Boy was a 90s Pip-Boy, band.
It's a device in the game that's kind of like your... It's kind of like a... It's like a Newton... A cross between a Newton and an iPad.
An annoying Clippy.
It's the
where you hit the start button and it comes up and you can like read information... you can configure. I think you can like configure like what outfit, you know, what you're wearing, and it controls those kinds of things. So it's
it's an in-game like control pad.
It's the settings menu for the game and for your character, and keeps track of things that you've been learned and assigned quests and all that.
But they call it a Pip-Boy.
It's called a Pip-Boy.
Because the character's literally supposed to be wearing it on his wrist, and so the idea is that when you're looking at it, he's like put it up and is using it as you're managing it.
It's just your digital interface.
How did it get that name? What does it stand for?
Fallout's whole kind of idea is that in the 50s that there was a nuclear war, and that they all that these are the people who moved down into a huge underground bunker and lived there for decades, and so it's got a very 50s vibe.
Everything's kind of locked into the technology of the 50s and the atmosphere of the 50s has kind of got that whole dated, vintage kind of thing going on.
Pip-Boy, PIP stands for Personal Information Processor. So right. Says Fallout Wiki.
And so the thing about it is, you know, there's an actual literal Pip-Boy that you can get and put on your wrist and use during the game. Now you have to put in
an app on your phone.
It has a slot suitable to accommodate a number of different kinds of smartphones, thanks to included phone inserts to adjust sizing, and works with the Pip-Boy companion app that lets players actually manipulate their in-game inventory, character perks, holotapes, and beyond. So it's an interesting second screen experience. It'll be interesting to see how well it works with the game, because it seems like it would be a good deal less clunky than the kind of, you know, hit the select button and scroll through the lists of things on there.
Now, that would be kind of cool, like to have either, you know, with phones getting the way that they are, have a phone be some kind of a companion to a game, or even better, you know, work in like a tablet to be a game companion, you know. I don't know if that's getting into the realm of where people would, you know, be running two or three screens anyway, but, you know, I've seen some, you know, for instance, like some flight sims and things like that, where they have separate banks of information that they can look, and it's not necessarily the computer monitor. That'd be cool, like maybe have maps on or something.
So it's like they're doing Photoshop.
Yeah.
Multiple screens except for gaming.
Yeah, for gaming.
So you have all your controls on one screen and then the visual of the game on the...
I think it'd be kind of cool. I know you could always add more monitors or add something, but I think, you know, having like, you know, something like this to augment the gaming experience. I'm holding up my cell phone, but, you know, having something where you could just go and do a few things over here and then go back to the keyboard might be kind of cool.
Having a touch interface that you can, you know, selecting your options and making changes and stuff, it would be a lot faster than kind of the click, then select,
yeah,
then
or,
scroll,
know,
scroll, 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 select.
Yeah, for instance, the Pip-Boy thing, instead of, you know, them having to ship a whole screen everything, they could just ship, you know, like a little armband thing that you could snap a smartphone into, and then, you know, the smartphone comes with an app, and then you can actually have that app augment the game, and then boom, there you go.
I think that's what he
said. That's what they're doing.
Oh, that is what they're doing. Yeah. Oh, it looked like it was the pictures I had seen looked like they were actual process screens. So okay,
I think you have to put. I think you put your phone in, and it is the screen.
They need to make that a platform. Then I guess
so. That would have
use
to
use that more often.
That would have to use the cloud, though.
Yeah, or just local Wi-Fi. Local Wi-Fi.
So it sounds like there's some interest in trying that when it comes out.
Yeah.
Now that I know what it stands for.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can always go play Fallout 3. It's out now.
I think I've seen some people play Fallout. I'm not a gamer really, so I hear other gamers talk about games, or I see people play
them.
It's
kind of an RPG thing. One of the things is you can basically choose whether you're kind of good or evil or what. And you choose who you're going to help and who you're going to oppose. And I mean, there's one part where you go into some town and like there's a religion that worships an atomic bomb, like in the old Planet of the Apes thing. And somebody asks you if you'll go and basically set off the bomb. And you have the choice. You can either go, you can go in and do it. But and then it, you know, sort of measures, you know, it shows sort of how evil or not you are.
So the Fallout game's been coming out since the late 90s. Fallout 197, Fallout 298. So they've
been
around
for a while.
That's pretty
fast, 97 and 98.
Yeah, and then they didn't do anything. Fallout 3 took another 10 years, took a decade, so 2008.
But they beat Duke Nukem.
They beat pretty much everyone, I think, has beat Duke Nukem.
Well, let's see. This one, it's not out today, but it will be out in, I think it's a couple weeks. The Kindle Paperwhite is actually pretty good. I have one of those, but Amazon has announced they're updating it with a 300 pixel per inch display. So you're talking about a 300 pixel e-ink display, which is twice as sharp as the last iteration and is equal to the screen in the Kindle Voyage. And they didn't change the price. So it's still basically $120 for the, Paperwhite, which makes one wonder why you would want to buy the $199 Voyage that they announced, I don't know, last year. The biggest thing is the Voyage has a higher contrast, brighter screen, but how much better can the screen be for the 80 to be worth the $80? Apparently, the Kindle Paperwhite's the most popular of the Kindles, and they're as we mentioned here, the font that they're using, they've improved the fonts and that the Kindles can handle, and that'll be coming out with the new one. This is available for pre-order today and could begin shipping at the end of, or should begin shipping at the end of the month. So you don't have to wait as long as the Fallout Pip-Boy edition to get the like very good paper looking Kindle Paperwhite. Now, the tough part is how do you get rid of the one that you've got that's got the lower resolution?
All of mine have been
actually
dying.
Those have been on sale. If you're it's one of those, if you're cheap and you want a Kindle Paperwhite, look around because they're having, there'll be sales as this new one comes in and supplants it. There'll be sales to sell out the old ones, which they're not bad, but the extra sharp, as my eyes get older, the better resolution on the screen certainly works a lot better than less resolution.
You can increase the font size.
Yeah, so you can have that whole Reader's Digest books for people, the vision impaired books. It is nice when you can make it put the type up larger, and I do enjoy reading on the Kindle better than any of the other screens I've read on. It is the closest sort of to the paper type experience.
Does it have any? I know the original version didn't have any backlighting, and then they had some versions that did have backlighting. Is that standard now, or?
Yeah, it's standard. Hmm. It has a backlight.
Is it backlight or side lit, or how does that work?
I think it's a backlight.
It actually.
It's not backlit because.
Well, because part of the thing is they're trying to
not be illuminated. That, no, yeah. it's illuminated from the sides. I thought, like there's a like LEDs around the edge or behind something that it lit it from it front lights it from the side. That's what I thought.
I don't know.
The way it throws light off, it sure seems like it's sure seems like it's backlit, but you know,
I'm guessing it's backlit because it's saying that the new Paperwhite does not have the ambient light sensor like the Voyage does. So I'm guessing that it's backlit. It just doesn't, you've got to ratchet it up or ratchet it down yourself possibly, or turn it on or turn it off yourself.
Because part of the thing that originally was that, oh, you know, it doesn't cause eye strain because it's not this super bright backlit light that's your eyes are having to adjust to read.
No, the main thing is it does those, the, you know, if you've got it in a darker environment, is the it just makes the page look white with black text on it or a kind of dark gray text. It does seem like, you know, nowadays I don't have to worry if I want to stay up late and read, I don't have to turn the lights out or pretend I've gone to bed or something. But I could see where it would have been valuable back when in my younger days of reading, when you might be reading late at night, when you have to hide a light to
say Abe Lincoln would have enjoyed it
next to his fire
because he had to you know use a candle underneath a blanket to read at night.
That's right, and it was an itchy woolly blanket too.
Okay, it looks like the new one we'll use quote backlit, but the way that they are doing the lighting is a little bit different. So it's supposed to look a little bit more natural, and it's not supposed to be as much in your eyes as the previous version was.
Well, yeah, they put in the much better screen. You know, it's a sounds like they took kind of half the technology of the Voyage and stuck it in the Paperwhite. So that's I guess it's interesting. Amazon seems to be more aggressive than a lot of companies in cannibalizing their own tech.
They would get rid of the Mac if they were Apple.
They would get rid of the Mac if they were Amazon. If they could.
So.
All right.
I was looking at the science stuff, and I think I messed up the link on the Philander story.
Yeah, you did.
The link went dead for a few months, I think.
You did that, Peter?
Oh, sorry, Mike. Yeah, because the URL was wrong. Now I forgot to paste in the URL is what's wrong.
Yeah, I noticed that. I had to Google search it because I was interested.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting how people kind of personify the lander. I mean, it's basically it's a washing machine sitting on a rock in space. But it has woken up. Let's see, where's the sort of best?
So I guess it, because the thing was it landed and they had that weird harpoon system that was supposed to like harpoon into the rock and ice or whatever, and then it had like a gear that was going to pull it down to like hold it in place, but I guess the harpoons didn't really stick, and so it kind of landed and bounced around and fell over, and I think they're still not sure exactly where it is.
Well, it ended up in a place where there was a shadow.
But there's it ended up wherever it is, there's spot. Too much. Yeah, there's too much shadow, and it couldn't get enough light to power.
Amazingly, when I Googled the headline on the first page of the web results for that, the listing for tonight's news on our website shows up on the results. That's pretty darn quick. Google follows us closely. They like to see what we're doing.
They're waiting for a bite of the Google segment.
Yeah, they're hopeful. The plus side, after 7 months, basically the thing sat silent for 7 months. And if you remember, I don't know, a couple months ago, we talked about that, you know, they tried to get in touch with it again.
It totally beat every child at the Quiet Game.
It sounds like the lander is ready for operations. Let's see. For 85 seconds, it, quote, spoke with ESA ground control via the Rosetta spacecraft, which is orbiting the comet that it's sitting on.
That's the Astros software package.
They said Philae is doing very well. It has an operating temperature of minus 35 degrees Celsius and has 24 watts available. Apparently, it's getting sunlight about 3 hours a day. And, of course, the scientists who were working on it, their mission scientists, went nuts when the news came out that it contacted them, because they'd been trying to get in touch with it. But then it suddenly, you know, came back on its own. It apparently has a decent amount of power. The 24 watts is a good amount, which is more than enough, according to Cohen Gertz, a member of the landing team. Says it's more than enough to communicate and do science activities. He says it's probably been awake for several comet days, which each last 12.4 hours, but it's not yet clear how many. Assuming the full connection reopens, the first science in coming days will likely be low-risk activities like taking images and turning on the ROMAP instrument, which measures the comet's magnetic field.
No spin cycles, because it's a washing machine.
The lander team were growing concerned about Rosetta's ability to fly in close enough to hear it, given increasing dust and gas activity as it gets closer to the sun. There was a general feeling that if Philae doesn't wake up soon, it might become too late. We were all delighted when we got the phone call last night.
Philae phone home.
For a lander that's supposed to have been doing a lot of stuff, it's been tweeting a whole lot. I think I know what it's been doing for the past 8 months. It's playing around on the net.
The current mystery is they're trying to figure out why the link up it lasted less time than they would have predicted. The window is about 2 hours, but the connection lasted only about 2 minutes. They said this might be due to uncertainties in its orientation, or else the lander may have moved, so it may not be in the spot that they thought it was.
Maybe the moon rock guy tried to tow it away. I got to reach out the lander. I'm going to sell it to the Saudis.
So they're working on it, and so in the short term, the orbiter is going to change its planned orientation to point directly at the lander, and in the long term, the orbiter may change its trajectory to aid communications. But they're starting to work on it. There were reports a few days ago of a possible sighting of a Philaeon Comet 67P, but they're not 100% certain that that's really showing them where it was. They couldn't get enough detail. So that's exciting. I mean, that's where science is still pretty darn cool.
You think the people at ESA that were on that project, do you think they got paid to sit there for 7 months and just wait to see if it communicated back and that's all they did?
I heard that they had to live like the lander, and so they had to sit in 35 degrees negative 35 degrees Celsius rooms in the dark on 12-hour days. But now here's some science that actually you might use. Why does the return trip feel shorter than the trip to go somewhere? You know, have you ever noticed that? You take a long trip, except, of course, in Barrett's experience when he comes back from Italy, it apparently, instead of seeming to take half the time of the trip out, it seemed to take, like, days?
It actually took three times the trip back. That's on a stopwatch, not seeming. But yeah, there is that little bit of a, I don't know if it's psychological or what you're going like to explain.
Anticipation
it to
versus
anticipatory. Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah. I don't care as much coming back, whereas I'm a little bit more, you know, paying attention on the way there. So that's my hypothesis.
That's what the science kind of says, is that the simple fact that when you're paying more attention to time passing, like you do on the way to someplace, that it makes time seem to move slower. Where when you're coming back and you don't care, it moves faster. Well, when you're seeing new things and so you're having new experiences and all that, time seems to move faster. And the Washington Post points out that if you want time to feel like it's moving faster, pay more attention. Sort of the tied to the idea the watched pot never boils, and time flies when you're having fun. That it's part of the thing is that when you devote more attention to a period of time, you have more memories of that, and you tend to remember it as being longer than it actually was.
Yeah, I know my 10-year-old self would agree with that, because at some point I figured out that when I was on trips to see my grandparents or whatever, we went out of town. I figured out at some point that if instead of just sitting there staring at the road while my parents drove, I actually closed my eyes and started like imagining stories and stuff, that the trip was much shorter.
Now, what if you're traveling towards a singularity?
I never did that.
And then away from the singularity.
it just seems faster coming away from the singularity.
Turn on your headlights or clap your hands.
Any experiment you want to perform. Yeah.
Yeah, the way I figured that worked best on family trips that made them seem to go by very quickly was I would close my eyes and sleep for as much time as possible. My dad didn't care for that, but it did work.
My family didn't care for that because usually I was the one driving.
There's the comedian that said something about how they wanted to die in their sleep,
peacefully in their sleep, like their grandfather,
instead of screaming in terror like the people riding with them.
Yeah.
And on the final science story is kind of interesting. They've come up with, bioengineers have invented a way to harvest energy from water evaporating at room temperature. That doesn't sound too sexy, but an engine with living parts kind of sounds more interesting.
Living parts?
It pulls energy seemingly out of thin air, harvests power from the ambient evaporation of room temperature water. It's a team of bioengineers led by Osgur Sahin at Columbia University have created the world's first evaporation-driven engine, which they reported in the journal Nature Communications. Using nothing more than a puddle of resting water, the engine, which measures less than 4 inches on each side, can power LED lights and even drive a miniature car. Better yet, it costs less than $5 to build it. Another researcher who's not involved in the research said that it's a very impressive breakthrough. That's Peter Frotzel, a biomaterial researcher at the Max Planck Institute. He says, quote, "The engine is essentially harvesting useful amounts of energy from the infinitely small and naturally occurring gradients in temperature near the surface of water. These tiny temperature gradients exist everywhere, even in some of the most remote places on Earth." Basically, it's got a unique material behind it that Sahin calls hydras, which is short for hygroscopy-driven artificial muscles. They're thin, muscle-like plastic bands that contract and expand with tiny changes in humidity. A pinky finger-length hydra band can cycle through contraction and expansion more than a million times with only a slight and almost negligible degradation in the material. And they can change shape. They can almost quadruple in length. And so I guess the that idea came to the researcher more than half a decade ago when he came across an unusual find in Nature. He was looking at physical properties of microorganisms with advanced imaging techniques. He discovered that the spore of a grass bacillus bacteria responds in a strange way to tiny amounts of moisture. Although it's dormant and has almost no metabolic activity and does no physical work, its outer shell could soak up and exude ambient levels of evaporated water and would expand and shrink when it happened. The spores stay very rigid as they expand and contract in response to humidity, which means their movements come with a whole lot of energy. So he did a bunch of experiments to mimic that. And then he paints the spores onto plastic strips using laboratory glue. So they cause this plastic to flex and release in a single direction, like a spring expanding and contracting.
This sounds like something from Naked Lunch.
Yeah, hydras and the Hail Hydra. You know, if you've watched the Captain America movies. But essentially, they pull on a cord, which is attached to a small electromagnetic generator, which turns the cord's movement into energy. The hydrants also pull open a set of four shutters on top of the engine, releasing the humid air. So basically, they cause the, you know, they make a cycle so that when the when they do their sequence, they pull open a set of four shutters on top of the engine, which means the humidity goes down and the hydras shed their water vapor and contract, which pulls the shutters back closed, and then it repeats. And so they found it works at room temperature with water that's at a wide range of temperatures. Obviously, hotter water works best because it evaporates.
All right, Pete, got to run. We're running out of time.
Oops, sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
But, time has evaporated.
So someday you'll be powering your LEDs with water engines, perhaps. Sorry.
All right, well, that music tells us it's time to go. Thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. Tony, if you want to send a question about your Mac upgrade, you can contact us via the website. I see you on hold there. We didn't have a chance to get to your call, but you're welcome to contact us via the contact form. You have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And I'm Barrett.
And he's Barrett. We'll see you next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites.
KPFT is the proud sponsor of Fresh Dark Festival, coming to Houston June 20th, downtown at Last Concert Cafe. Fresh Dark intends to create an environment that caters to the exposure and appreciation of emerging artists whose styles explore the fusions of electronica, funk, jazz, soul, reggae, and hip-hop music in an abstract and organic fashion. This inaugural festival features an incredible lineup of artists, including headliner Shafiq Hussein of Sci-Rock Creative, Oshun, fresh off of their Red Bull Sound Select, Fleet Edison, DJ Elevated, Milky Way featuring Bobby Earth, Radio Galaxy, Josiah Gabriel, Android Genius, Danny Watts, DJ Anarchy, DJ Nimbus, Etika, Low, The Regal People, Maya J, Teen Thieves, and many more. You can get more information at FreshDarkFest.com.
This is KPFT, Houston. There has never been a better time to donate your car to KPFT. When you contact the KPFT car donation hotline, you will do something great for this community. Call 1-855-573-8227 to donate or find out more information. KPFT is the only radio station of its kind located in Texas. It broadcasts music, news, information, and cultural programming from national distributors as well as locally produced offerings and more. Your donated vehicle goes to support this unique voice for yourself and others. Have an old car taking up space in your driveway? Donate it to KPFT now. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution